This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Spring, fall, as long as it's not at all, I think we're all going to be okay.
Spring or fall, let's play ball.
It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN.
Come
Radio.
On, Cliff. My kid just tried a rhyme thing and you didn't do anything bad with that. All of a sudden you bang mine.
Oh, they
Come
both
on.
Were terrible. I'm sorry. Both were absolutely horrid.
Seems like a collective gong there and a collectively appropriate way to start the show. It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic and Mike Golic Jr. starting off the show the only way we know how. Awful.
We just want to play ball, whether it's spring or fall.
Oh, man. We can't keep trying to. Yeah.
I'm just doing it on purpose now to make Cliff mad.
That's become abundantly clear is we cannot rhyme. And
on time.
Got that last one on your system?
Well, it's a start. You know, listen, 8 left, man. 8 left. I got to get them in when I can.
Really just emptying the clip on all of this. Boy, oh boy, we are in trouble on this one. College football taking center stage last night. We've had so much news about the professional sports and all of the good things going along with that. ESPN had a college football special last night. We saw Reese Davis, a couple of others there, Heather Dinich, Joey Galloway and company, all breaking down what could be possible going forward with college football here. And the news came then from someone that we're very familiar with, and Notre Dame's athletic director, Jack Swarbrick, who brought up the idea that he believes that college football season should start on a delay, that there should be anywhere between 8 and 10 games in all this, and ultimately buying ourselves that time is probably the biggest asset to college football going forward here. Heather Dinich, who will join us in a little bit, our ESPN college football analyst, talked about what college athletic directors are looking for here in the next couple weeks.
They are going to exhaust almost all options they have to try and make this work. But the next 2 weeks, particularly the end of next week, July 31st, is a targeted benchmark to make some significant decisions. And the people that I have spoken to are expecting that decision to possibly center around whether or not the season starts on time. Next week, remember, this is when players are going to be allowed out on the field to do walkthroughs, actually have a football in their hand. They want to see how that experience goes to evaluate it before making any big decisions. Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby told me he took it even a step further and said, I want to see what it looks like when they have helmets and shoulder pads out there. So those are things that they're looking for. And also the return of students to campus is a major concern for all of these decision makers. August 1st, it happens at Notre Dame. Jack Swarbrick, their athletic director, told me today, just minutes before the show, he would like to see the season delayed.
Remember, again, Notre Dame has switched their students and classes. They're starting August 10th. They've moved it up, so that's why students start to go there August 1st, and then by Thanksgiving, the semester will be over, supposedly trying to beat what people think may be a late-in-the-year coming back
second wave
of the virus, if that happens. We all hope it doesn't, but, you know, obviously we don't know. So, listen. Why not push? You know, if you don't know right now, nobody's playing a full schedule anyway, right? So we're used to going all the way till that first week of December when you get the conference championship games. Then you have a little time off. Then you have bowl games. Then you get to the then you get to the playoffs. You have time to push. You know, Jack Swarbrick said they've already lost USC, Stanford, and Wisconsin because the Big Ten and Pac-12 has said only conference games. Jack said he'd like to get 8 to 10 games in instead of the normal 12. So you're not going to have a full season. Nobody is going to have a full season. So why not, if you have to, push? Just make sure, wait, take the extra time if you need, and then start the season. We all sure as hell don't know if we're going to finish the season, but let's make sure we can start it relative to what's going on around the country.
Yeah. Convenient, by the way, Jack pushes for between 8 and 10 games, which is exactly what Notre Dame has right now on the schedule after losing those 3 games. Interesting how that number tends to come in mind there, but it falls in line because outside of Lincoln Riley, there aren't a lot of people that are as comfortable floating the idea of the spring season and all this. Mac Brown was open and saying, I can't think about it right now because I need all my resources. Pointed at this fall with this one. Even talked about carrying a 6-foot stick out at practice.
Yeah.
I feel like giving college football coaches 6 foot sticks is probably not the smartest thing that we can do. I feel like that only ends poorly for everybody involved. But we all know what we're waiting for in here too is we're waiting for what the SEC says. Right. It's been really them, the ACC, and the Big 12 that have been kind of hanging out, supposedly coordinating efforts on a lot of this and waiting to go. But and I talked about this with Peter Burns and Katie George on Best Week Ever this past weekend, because everyone's been talking about college football czar needs something like that, a college football commissioner. What we're getting with the union of those three conferences, them supposedly working together on what they're going to do going forward, is some version of what everyone wants, the Power Five working yes. together. And if there is a czar in that group, it's SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. He has been the most frontward-facing voice for a lot of these discussions, and he also talked on the College Football Live special last night on not putting a deadline on things, but understanding there are those important dates Heather mentioned coming up.
The challenge right now is to understand where the finish line may be. And you know, last week we increased athletic activity. There's an opportunity to do the same later this week. And so we've had a check-in point today about our preparations to do so. Next week is a week prior to practice. We will have seen a lot of professional sports activity through the month of July. NFL training camps are scheduled to begin officially next week. But we've got rookies reporting, so we've got learning opportunities there. And we've tried to use every one of these experiences as a learning opportunity to help inform our decision-making. And the milestone check next week is, are we ready to move into that stage of practice? And part of that will be a conversation about what does the season look like. And that's a conversation that's been taking place for weeks.
Listen, and that's smart. Look what others are doing, especially those that are going to be doing it like you, like the NFL, like Major League Baseball.
Which is good to hear someone say publicly, because we've very rarely gotten leaders in sports saying, yeah, we're actively looking at these other sports.
I mean, why wouldn't you look at what's working and what's not? Because there are going to be some pros and some cons on everybody's situation. So, again, by next Friday, July 31st, they want to have some decisions made, because as you get into, for anybody that may not know the college schedule, as you get into the beginning of August, that's when you start to put the pads on. Supposedly start to put the pads on
in theory
and get going. So is that going to be delayed? Is there going to be more of an acclimation period? Are they going to wait for some states to the spikes to start to come down? You know, that's the issue here we obviously have is the NBA is one group, baseball is one group, NFL is one group, college football is not one group, as we know. So everybody's kind of figuring out on their own terms. The latest conference, the SWAC, has said they are going to play spring football and try and that's a whole nother conversation on spring football, forgetting even the players that want to go into the draft if we get that far, spring football, and then anybody who's an underclassman going and playing fall football right after that in the recovery time. That's a discussion we can have for another day, because everybody is hoping there is no spring football. And spring football, certainly if you have to push the spring, there's no guarantee it's spring football. You just obviously commonsensically buy yourself more time to play. But everybody wants to, most people want to play in the fall, and they want to figure out a way to play in the fall. And I do think it is going to end up being delayed. We're used to seeing those games. Remember, weekend zero was the end of August. So obviously the first weekend was the first weekend in September of the games. I could easily see that being pushed.
All right, well, let's stick with the spring idea, because a lot of people are getting comfortable with the idea of a push. Most people want to stick with the fall, and this was a big theme of the College Football Live special last night, was everyone pointing out the problems in the spring model and why they don't think it's viable.
Golic.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr.
Our ESPN NFL reporter, Jeff Darlington, joins us now. Jeff, good morning, and you just heard it there. All joking aside, it seemed like this was oddly a decision that the NFL and the Players Association were able to come to together pretty amicably.
Well, yeah, but you know what the funny thing is? Well, nothing's funny about any of this, but you know what the kind of weird thing to me is? Like, isn't that sort of the way it should have been? Like, to me, it was really weird that there was any level of potential divisiveness about the frequency of testing for COVID. Like, if you can get access to testing for daily testing, everybody is incentivized for that. Even if the owners pretend like, you know, even if the owners, let's just say they didn't care about player health and safety. Let's just pretend that in an alternate universe, they were like, we don't care if our players get COVID. Their product on the field is still benefited by having guys healthy. So to me, it made total sense that they would get to this place. And to me, it makes me wonder if the NFL all along is simply using this in their back pocket so that when the financial negotiations take place, the much more important negotiations take place, that they can be like, well, look, we gave you everything you wanted over here.
So along those lines, so we have no preseason games. We have all the testing procedures in place. We have the roster size 80 instead of 90. I have a feeling this is where you're going to go, what you just mentioned. Is that what's next? Is the money part of it next? And what is it?
It is. I mean, they still have a couple little things to work out in terms of the return to camp. But, yeah, the money is. And here's the thing. They can go to camp. They can report for camp and figure out the money stuff later. I talked to one executive several weeks ago, even before the NFL players kind of started to raise their voices a little bit, who said that he thought that it would take until late July, more likely early August, for them to figure out the financial aspect of it. But there's really no incentive for the players to figure that out now. Like, they're almost incentivized to let this bleed into the season so that they don't have to take the hit this year. Not that I think they would agree to that anyway, but they're looking to make this thing actually be something that takes place over the next 10 years, that gets essentially spread out. The pain gets spread out over a longer period. The owners are the ones that want it this year, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I could see these negotiations actually certainly leaking into August.
And that's part of the financials of lost revenue and salary cap, and when they want to try and ease that, as you mentioned, owners and one-year players over a longer time. But there are other financial things that would need to be done before that, wouldn't it, Jeff? Like opt-out, if players are going to get money, if they opt out or have a reason to opt out, where are we with any of that?
That's right. And opt-out is the one thing that does that absolutely is under the financial umbrella, but something that needs to get worked out before camp. And it looks like it is going to. They made a lot of progress yesterday on that. I don't have the specifics yet as to what the opt-out will look like or whether players will feel, I don't know what the right word is, incentivized to opt out or feel comfortable to opt out. It'll be very interesting to see if, you know, along the lines of baseball, they've had some star players opt out of the season. I don't know why I don't expect that to happen in the NFL. I don't know why I feel that way, even though certainly if there's players with underlying risks or family members with underlying risks, you would think that there will be those players. But for now, they're still working on that language, and it'll be interesting to see if that language makes it so that players feel comfortable doing so.
ESPN NFL reporter Jeff Darlington with us here on Golic and Wingo. And the other portion of this that's really been crystallized in the last day or so was the what we all expected to come, 90-man training camp rosters that are normally there being trimmed down to 80-man. But, Jeff, does that still does that have any effect on what might happen going forward with the talk of expanded rosters for the season when those bodies are going to be at a premium with everything going on?
Yeah, I don't think so. It's interesting because, you know, generally speaking, I think maybe people – the general fan sees that and kind of is like, oh man, what a bummer for those 10 guys. Generally speaking, I mean, you have two different cutdowns before you get to the 53-man roster. I think it's 70. I should know this. I think it's either 70 or 75. You go from 90 to 75 to 53. Generally speaking, general managers know the day the camp starts. They could whittle it down to 75 right then. You need the camp body. In this case, with this circumstance, I think that we'll see that normal whittle down, and then, to your point, you'll have your added guys for COVID, for instance. The practice squad will be bigger, and the active roster will be capable of having more players. But to your point, I think we'll I can't remember. I'd say like 62 players or something like that. So really, from going from 90 to 80, that's the, to put it harshly, inconsequential part. It's once it gets down to that sort of 65-60 number that I think it'll be important to have guys around available in case guys get sick.
It is tough to talk about, especially for guys like me and Mike, who, you know, I was a 10th rounder. He was undrafted, you know.
Right.
That's and we understand it's guys' livelihood and they're trying to have jobs. And I get the fans don't really care much about that. It's about the guys that are on the field. But it's still tough. But it happens every single year. Guys are going to lose their jobs. As far as the positive tests, we've had 95 players test positive in the NFL, up from 72 on July 10th. Where is the level of concern about, is there, I don't know how many total tests have been given as opposed to these 95 positives as far as any kind of ratio we have?
Well, they're more concerned about what happens once those guys get tested when they're in the building, right? And that's the thing. They won't be able to get into the building until they have the two negative tests separated by 72 hours. So, you know, oddly for them, and we don't know enough about immunity at this point. We know a little bit more about antibodies. I'm not going to sit here and play doctor, but like those guys now probably feel a little bit more comfortable going in if they've had it. I mean, it's probably not my place to say, but I just think that the timer starts when guys start entering the building. And to me, the more concerning aspect of this, the thing that I can't kind of wrap my head around, is they're going to do daily testing for 2 weeks. So you'll know after 2 weeks, all right, you know, none of our guys have it. But what then? Like, players aren't in a bubble. It's not like the NBA where, like, okay, everybody, nobody has it, and we're all in this bubble, so it's going to be okay. It's like those people go home to their families. They go home to their family. Their wife just had dinner with a friend. She picked it up. He gets it. He brings it to his locker room, and poof. Like, That's the thing that I guess I can't wrap my head around. You can do 2 weeks of testing, and if it goes above that 5% threshold, they'll go back to daily testing. But I just, for me in my head, given the close confines and the lack of social distancing that occurs naturally in football, it's very difficult for me to think that there'll ever be anything other than daily testing if there's going to be a successful season.
Yeah, Jeff, to that end, is the NFL's pushback on that based around, I mean, is it money? I mean, we've heard that overall the amount of testing needed for the league is going to be at $75 million for the entire league, which, I mean, you take that to all 32 teams and it's like $2.3 million a team, which seems like chump change for a lot of these owners. Is that the pushback on this? Because logically, I'm with you. The NBA is having all this success and saying it's because we're testing daily. How can the NFL turn around and then try and deny that?
I don't know. That is the biggest mystery in all of this. And it's kind of what I alluded to at the start. Like, why is it even a divisive issue about like the amount of testing? I understand the NFL will want to keep some sort of, you know, aesthetic. They want to make this look good for the public that they're not taking up too many tests, but like do they really care? Like, you know, they're going to work toward having as many tests as they can. If it's financial to your point, that's crazy. I don't know. I don't understand why testing is an issue at all. And I certainly don't understand why after 2 weeks you would go to a different model if it potentially means a more likely outbreak.
Jeff Darlington joining us here on Golic and Wingo. So we go from the NFL to guys that want to be in the NFL, the college players that we've already seen the Ivy League, their football say they're not playing in the fall, so it would be in the following year. The SWAC has come out and said, we're going to do spring football. That's what we're going to play, and it's certainly not out of the realm that some of the Power Five may end up there, depending on the virus, which is going to dictate. So if that were to happen, what is the feasibility of the NFL, which works separately than the NCAA, obviously, of moving their draft normally at the end of April, which is when the spring season probably would end if college teams play then?
You would think that they could find a way to move it a little bit, right? The NFL is very stubborn. I mean, look, I was having conversations with people before this year's draft, which, you know, as we know, they did it and they pulled it off. But there was talk that, I mean, up until late that they still planned on having it in Las Vegas. Like, the NFL is trying to just charge forward, whether you agree with them or not. I don't know how much they'll be willing to budge on the timeline of the college season. Certainly, if the college season is going to end, at a reasonable time, sure. But I don't think the NFL, for instance, would go into, like, June or July with the draft. They're just so stubborn about it that they'd rather force players to opt out of their season –
than to do that. And it'll be very interesting to see even like what happens to the combine, what happens to some of those aspects of it, and how does that impact college football players? If you're Trevor Lawrence, are you really going to play this season knowing that you're going to enter the draft? I mean, he probably will. He seems like the type of guy that would, but like, he's the number one overall pick no matter what. So it'd be very interesting to see how that impacts the desire of players to either prepare for the NFL draft or just go about their season regularly.
You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Darlington. As all of this information continues to unfold, Jeff can be doing a great job with it. We appreciate the time this morning, man.
Golic. Thank you.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night. Yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
We are delighted to be joined by someone who is going to make sure that we stay off that path that we have started this morning of bad rhymes, bad jokes, and now maybe potentially quotes that will get us fired sooner already in a lot of this. Heather Dinich, our ESPN college football reporter, joins us now. Heather, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. But guys, if you think your dad jokes are bad, you should hear my mom jokes. But we'll just save those for another day, okay?
Okay. Well, I could use somebody else getting ripped instead of me because I'm getting crushed this morning, Heather. Crushed.
I'm glad you brought that up, Heather, because mom jokes don't get their just due in this conversation, I feel like. So
that's totally true, but I'm going to spare all of us, okay? We'll talk football, I promise.
There we go. We'll get Heather's mom jokes off air for everybody and get them back to you guys there. But while you were on air last night, Heather, as a part of our college football special on ESPN, you mentioned and brought up the news that you spoke to Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick about his desire to see the season start pushed back. What was the thought process for him going into that statement?
A lot of it has to do with the fact that the students are coming back to Notre Dame on August 1st, which is right around the corner. I'm talking about the general student body population. And his concerns echoed that of many athletic directors that I've spoken to across the country, in that we've got a really good thing going on here in terms of our athletic facilities and the protocols we have in place. But once everybody else comes back to campus, what does that look like? Once the football players start going through walkthroughs next week, what does that look like? So he's saying, I think we should have a little bit more time to evaluate those circumstances across the country. And guys, his statements are powerful because it's important to remember, as Notre Dame sits there as an independent, Jack Swarbrick is the one athletic director in the country who has a seat at the table with the 10 FBS commissioners who comprise the College Football Playoffs Management Committee. So he's in those conversations. So his opinion, I think, is extremely significant as we come to this countdown of whether or not the season is going to start on time.
They have already lost the USC game, the Stanford game, and the Wisconsin game because Pac-12 and Big Ten are going conference only. Do they have the ability anywhere to pick up games if they need?
They do, but I also don't know necessarily that they have to, because as of right now, they're sitting at 9 games. Ideally, they would like to obviously keep that Arkansas game with the SEC, so it depends on what that conference does. And, of course, they have the 6 games already scheduled with the ACC. Will they count as conference games for the ACC if that league goes conference only? All these decisions, he compared it to a Rubik's Cube when I asked him when he would actually like to see the season start, because there's so much collaboration and conversations with other conference commissioners about what that might look like. But he told me his ideal is between 8 and 10 games, and I laughed and I said, you've kind of already got it at 9. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see if they need to add another one. The one thing I did think of this morning, though, was I talked to the executive director of the Football Bowl Association, and if conferences like the Big Ten and Pac-12 go to a 10-game conference schedule, which we should learn maybe by the end of next week at the latest, they wouldn't have to change bowl eligibility requirements, because remember, it's 500. So I guess there's no need for an NCAA waiver or a change to that rule if the games played are 10, but I think you might have to have some conversations if it's anything less than that.
as I sit here in a Duke's Mayo Bowl t-shirt,
yeah.
I realized this morning for the first time that we hadn't really discussed a lot of the possibilities around what the bowl season might entail in all of this. So that's a great note from Heather Dinich, our ESPN college football reporter that's with us here now. Heather, we also heard in the course of this from Greg Sankey, the SEC's commissioner, who is obviously one of the other very powerful voices in the world of college football, about some important dates coming up in the next couple of weeks. And I'm curious, as they get to some of these points, what are Greg Sankey and a lot of these other college commissioners, athletic directors, looking for to see as they get ready to make their decision? What are the markers for them?
Well, first and foremost, it's the trends of the coronavirus, right? And it's gone on a roller coaster to, hey, we might be able to do this, to, whoa, concerns are very, very high. And where does that look over the next week? And the other thing that they're really paying attention to, as you know, guys, is the pros. And is their experiment working with the NFL and Major League Baseball and the NBA? And knowing, obviously, that college sports is extremely different because you can't have that quote bubble, or if you're talking about the NBA wobble, whatever it might be, it's a different scenario. So again, it goes back to the point of also seeing what happens when the college football players are going through walkthroughs, when they have an actual football in their hand, when the coach is out there with a mask on and actually coaching, can he keep his distance? All of those types of scenarios. But leading the discussion, and I will say this over and over again, is the trend of the coronavirus and the advice that they are getting from their medical advisory boards.
Heather, while we know things are changing day to day and week to week, there has to be a point. And it seems like we keep talking about college football had this long runway. Does the runway end out next Friday, July 31st? Does there have to be some sort of decision made by then?
I think the decision that needs to be made is when to start the season. And that's what Jack Swarbrick and I talked about. He said that he thinks that you'll start to see some of those type of decisions emerge, because that's the first step in figuring out, okay, what does my practice schedule look like? When does the first game actually start? What does the schedule look like? Yes, if the season is going to start on time, that certainly needs to be determined within the next week to 10 days. That being said, this is so fluid. Every single person that I speak to is so reluctant to put an actual date on anything. But the SEC and ACC have put out statements, and Greg Sankey said last night on the show that next week is going to be a milestone for the conference.
Whew, that's, and when it comes from that conference, we know that is one that's going to drive and direct a lot of what goes on in college football. Heather, the one other thing, and I know we've talked to you before, and you've said it's not anyone's first, second, or third choice in a lot of this, but the spring season is something that's being spoken aloud by powerful people in a way that was not the case, you know, a month ago when we were having these discussions around college football. Have you gotten any sense when it comes to that that's going to have to be a collective decision? We've seen so much of this done conference by conference, trickle-down decisions, that something that seismic might have to come with more agreement from the Power Five conferences as a whole?
I would think so. Yeah, but as I say that, though, those that can play will, you know? I really believe that. If it's the SEC out there alone and they have two teams that can't play and they can determine a conference champion, I think we might see that. It's really hard to predict that stuff, but I will tell you that I spoke with a SWAC commissioner earlier this week, and that was a really interesting decision by them to put out publicly their exact plans for what a spring season would look like, because many of the FBS conferences kind of have this on the back burner, well, you know, March through April, and have kind of loosely talked about it. But for Commissioner Charles McClellan to put it out there, I said to him, you know, I'm being told from other people the reason that is not being done right now is because nobody knows if the coronavirus will be any better in the spring than it is right now. And he said, I understand that. If it's not better, we're not going to have a spring. But we did this to give our fans and our players hope.
Well, and there is hope, and it's like at least maybe it'll start hopefully some point at this fall. On the other side of that, is there less of that? Is there maybe a less than 50% chance on you go to the Pac-12 and you go California schools like Cal, Stanford, USC, UCLA, that they'll even have football? High school football has already been pushed until next year. Are we in real danger of California colleges not playing?
You have to be, because it goes back to, you know, one of their questions was, what's driving the decisions? The first is the coronavirus. We can't forget university presidents in this. And what do campus situations look like? Because if there aren't any students on campus, all bets are off. If you're not allowed there, if the governor says you can't have groups of more than 25 to 30, we all know that's not a football team. So it depends on what those state and local regulations look like, what the university presidents decide. So I would certainly say, yes, that conference is in danger. And there's no more real portrayal of that picture than when, a week ago, Commissioner Larry Scott announced that he tested positive for the coronavirus. You have the leader of the whole conference dealing with that issue. So it's certainly an extremely legitimate concern out west.
Plenty of legitimate concerns around college football. Thankful that we have Heather Dinich, our ESPN college football reporter, to help him out with us. Heather, we appreciate the time this morning. We'll have you back next time for Strictly Mom Jokes.
Mom's away.
Thanks, Heather. Appreciate it. Oh, my gosh.
Thank you, Heather.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant Jell-O mold. It's very interesting where that went.
The coffee just hit. Knuck if you buck is on, and it's time to list stuff. Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Cover all your bases with Straight Talk Wireless. Get the same networks as big carriers, only pay up to 50% less. Get the unlimited plan, 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month. Only at Walmart. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at StraightTalk.com.
All right, you got the list today. I think it's a pretty interesting list. I like it. And you're going five, and that's all you're doing is five. You're actually five. Sticking to the list.
This is actually a strict list, mostly because I'm very lazy in this. It's the top five players going into the 2020 season that still don't have a ring. Now, this is top five relative to who is still at the top of their game in this.
Right.
But also career longevity factors.
Yeah, I got to throw in
that. How long have you been good in this situation?
Right.
As well as accounting for positional importance on this one. All right. Well, how well are you actually influencing your team over the course of things? You feeling good about this, Dad? You ready?
I like the thought process of this list. I will let you know if I like your list.
Let's kick it off with number five.
Number five.
Zach Martin.
Oh, boy.
I couldn't help myself.
Right out of the gate.
I mean, listen, but again, if you're looking at this, a walk-in Hall of Famer, probably since he entered the league, the consensus, if not in the top two conversation, for the best at his position on America's team. Tell me how Zach Martin gets left off.
Oh, I'm just trying to say. So basically, you're basically saying the best lineman with a little bit of longevity that has a career path taking you to the Hall of Fame that doesn't have a ring.
Six-time Pro Bowler, four-time first-team All-Pro. Since he entered the league, just six false starts and five holding calls since he's entered the league. He is the best at what he does.
He is.
He is a future Hall of Famer, and he's been doing it long enough to not have a ring. Quentin Nelson would also have a claim in this, but again, the longevity for Jack.
Enough.
In all this. Also, future Hall of Famer Quentin Nelson. It's all what it is.
But, hey.
All right, number four.
Number four.
Quintoris Lopez Jones. Julio Jones.
So I was wondering what wide receiver. I knew there'd be one there. We always talk about the top ones like a Michael Thomas, a DeAndre Hopkins, and a Julio Jones. And I will give you out of that grouping the guy with the longevity and the guy with what he has done, how good he is. I would agree with this one, Julio Jones.
Don't sleep on that, because you know what they say about wide receivers.
What's
they
that?
Go in runs. Number three.
Number three on the list. Stay with me.
Larry Fitzgerald. Got to throw L. Fitz.
No brainer. Absolute no brainer. Again, not near the top of the receivers in the league right now.
No.
But again, walk-in Hall of Famer for what he has done in the league, I believe, without question.
One of five wideouts with at least 500 yards in each of the last eight seasons. Him, T.Y. Hilton, the aforementioned Julio Jones, Golden Tate, and Emmanuel Sanders. So still balling, even going late in all of this. Currently second all-time in receiving yards and sixth in receiving touchdowns going into year 17. Number two.
Number two.
Limping into this one, but you're going to see where I'm going. It's hard to go down the list of quarterbacks and actually find guys that aren't Super Bowl champions.
Well, exactly.
Phillip Rivers is
I mean, you can't name another one that's most likely in the Hall of Fame that doesn't have a ring, right? Especially in his class, Ben Roethlisberger, Eli Manning. You got Aaron Rodgers. You got Drew Brees. Obviously, Tom Brady. So you're listing Patrick Mahomes. So you're listing the top quarterbacks who are either already in the NFL or Hall of Fame or going to be in the Hall of Fame or right on the trajectory for it.
I'll throw Russell Russell Wilson in that list too, as far as future Hall of Famers, and that won the job that he's done.
But he obviously has a ring as well. It's tough to find at that position anyone other than Phillip Rivers. I'm trying to really just go in my head.
And I think Phillip Rivers, because we've had the Hall of Fame discussion with him so much, obviously Matt Ryan is another really good quarterback that lacks a ring, has an MVP season.
That's very true.
And Matthew Stafford is the other one I'll continue to champion for the Detroit Lions.
Okay. I like the Phillip Rivers one, though. I'm with you.
And we'll get to number one for you right here.
Number one.
You could argue the best player in the NFL each and every year. He's got a legitimate claim to that stake. Aaron Donald.
Yeah, you know what? No matter how much we bicker about O-line and D-line, when it comes to talent and recognizing it, I know you understand where the top talent is. It's on the defensive line.
Over the past three seasons, Aaron Donald, amongst all players, first with 264 pass rush wins in that metric we track here at ESPN, beat your man in 2.5 seconds. First with 120 pass rush wins against double teams over that time. First with 11 forced fumbles. All in all, an absolute force of nature. A guy who got close. We know that Rams team that got to play the Patriots in the ugliest Super Bowl known to mankind.
Sure was.
Aaron Donald, the best at what he does, still needs a ring on.
I actually like your list.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
We're delighted to be joined by not only one of the best offensive tackles in pro football, but an NFLPA player rep who is in part of these conversations as the league is getting ready to resume play. Ronnie Stanley, Ravens left tackle, joins us now. Ronnie, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Definitely, man. Excited to have you here. And so take us through what it's been like. You're a PA rep for the Baltimore Ravens. There's so many calls and decisions being made in the last few days. What have these conversations been like as you try and not only get this information, but give it out to the other members of your team?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of been like a whirlwind, you know, trying to negotiate the terms of, you know, our health and safety, as well as the camp deadline coming up so quickly. You know, guys are wondering if they're, you know, planning travel for the family, not what they're doing, what their plans are, the timing and of everything. So it's just, you know, it's kind of been hectic, you know, trying to adjust the times and the virus.
How difficult has it been? I mean, certainly with this, it's all non, you know, you're not in the same area, and why you be in the league, and obviously up till this year, you could meet in meeting rooms because you're there in person. So how much more difficult has this been, and has there been any more apathy or trouble getting players on the phone to kind of keep them up to date on everything?
I can only speak for the Ravens, but I know that other teams, you know, opted not to do off-season programs. That was part of the choice, but the Ravens did do their off-season program virtually, and they had a lot of success actually getting a lot of guys just coming and showing up for that and just making sure they were checking in. So, you know, it was definitely something to adjust to. It wasn't easy, and still to this day, not easy, you know, having a consistent workout schedule and really having all the equipment you need. So a lot of guys had to do a lot of adjusting.
A lot of adjustments being made. Ronnie Stanley, Ravens tackle and NFL player rep for the team with us here on Golic and Wingo. And so looking forward now, Ronnie, you guys are starting to set more of the terms about what it's going to be like in training camp here. We know no preseason games. That was a big sticking point for the Players Association side. As a guy who is now a veteran, you know, starting to become a veteran in this league and one of the most well-respected players at your position, what's that adjustment going to be like, do you think, for guys to not have those preseason games? Are you going to feel comfortable going into this season?
You know, that's honestly a good question. I feel like that we're really going to see for the first time how that's going to play out with the kind of, I guess you would say, lack of preparation time. You know, I do think it's valuable to have those games to be able to, you know, kind of get yourself ready for the season, kind of see new opponents, put yourself in that game day atmosphere. At least for me, that's how I kind of look at it. Just kind of, you know, kind of like a walkthrough run, you know, which you would do like before, you know, any big event. You want to have yourself in that same environment before. But, you know, it's like I said, it's things that guys are going to try to adjust to. We know that we have to prepare and be ready for the season because, you know, no matter what time we have, it's still a 16-game season, and we're going to have to be ready for it. So if it happens to play out, you know.
And we all hope there is going to be 16 games in the season. And, Ronnie, with the negotiating between your union and the league, we know we've gotten to know preseason games. We know we've gotten the testing down on how that's going to work. We know what the roster is going to be going into camp. Has enough been done to where everybody is going to be comfortable reporting on July 28th?
Yeah, I think it's kind of subjective at that point. I think some teams have more things in place than others just based on the resources they have available. So as for the Ravens, I'm confident coming back that they have all their everything in place, you know, that all the precautions are taken in the facility. So and we're trying to get that across the board. I think that's one of the big things from the PA. We kind of want that standard across the board for everyone. And that was, you know, one of our big points.
Ronnie Stanley with us, Ravens offensive tackle. And so, Ronnie, for you guys specifically, for the Baltimore Ravens, do you feel like you're at an advantage going into the season just because you returned so many players from a great team last year?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think that just because, you know, we're such a young team. I think we're very talented. I think we have a lot of potential. And, you know, I really like the mentality of our players. I think we have a lot of team players.
A lot of team players, certainly, and the reigning MVP, a quarterback, yeah. That certainly helps with that. Walk us through it, because especially on the offensive line, you block for so many different kinds of quarterbacks. Certainly, listen, Lamar is a stark departure from Joe Flacco as far as styles in this one. So what is it like up front for the group that has to block for the league MVP, knowing he's a guy that can make big plays but has to move around a lot to do so at times?
It's exciting. I mean, I think it kind of drives us to just want to make that extra block for him and just know, I know in my head when I'm blocking for him, I know that at any point, you know, he could break out. With Heisman, you always had to be ready for the escape. You know, you always had to, you know, anticipate that. So with Lamar, it's kind of, I have to kind of anticipate where the defender's, you know, chasing and kind of try to, you know, follow him without knowing exactly where Lamar is going behind me. But it's very exciting just blocking for him, just knowing that anything happened at any time. And in the back of my head, I always want to be, you know, launching that touchdown block for him. So just knowing that's always a possibility is, you know, very reassuring.
As far as let's take people inside a little bit, Ronnie, because you've been in the league 5 years and then at Notre Dame before that. And in those years there at Notre Dame, you have the summer workout. So you're used to working out together as a team. Then you get to the NFL, and in April, you start the OTAs where you're together as a team working out. So this is the first year in a long time for you where it had to be on your own. And I know you had the Zoom workouts and such, but still you were on your own. How much more difficult was it, if at all, I guess I should ask, to do that on your own in a way that you have not been used to in your college and pro days?
I think last year was the first year I really just kind of took to working out in the off season on my own, just kind of took it upon myself and I kind of set the groundwork for pretty much like what I'm doing right now. So luckily enough, I kind of started that last year, just really getting after it on my own. And that just kind of really helped, like going into quarantine and just kind of working out my own was already kind of natural. But it, like I said, it was also hard, you know, just having the equipment available to, you know, if you want to have like a good squat day or something, but you know, it's things that just had to be adaptable. And but it was very good that I knew that I could, you know, be able to work out on my own and just be able to get that type of workout that I need.
And that standard that you've set is a pretty darn good one, yep. considering now you're by and large looked at as one of the best, if not the best, left tackles in the league here on this. And Ronnie, though, that the closeness of that group, your guys' offensive line and what you were able to do in that running game, blocking for Lamar overall last year was great, but you lose a big voice and a big presence in that room in Marshall Yanda this offseason. How are you, especially as one of the guys now I'm sure look to as a leader, going about trying to fill the void of an all-time great?
Yeah, Marshall, you know, is undeniable, like a Hall of Famer in my eyes. Impossible to purely replace just one person for him like that. So I think in my head, I'm not really just going to try to, like, do exactly what he did. I'm just going to, you know, keep doing what I'm doing and just try to amplify my just leadership role, rather be vocal, probably be a little more vocal to the guys in that same capacity that Marshall was. But, you know, for me, I think it's more just keep focused on keeping my game as best as I can, just so I can set that example by the way I play. And then, you know, try to add on the vocal aspect more on with it.
And I guess looking forward towards this year, Ronnie, you guys accomplished so much last year. You were as exciting a team to watch as any as there was in football. You had the MVP at quarterback. Him and Mark Ingram, what they were doing in that backfield was incredible. So what's the next step for you guys now this year, whether it's for you personally and then as the team overall, of what you guys feel you need to do in order to get over that hump and start to make a deep playoff push?
I think we need to keep moving forward. I think we need you know, just to keep what we've been doing and with that same drive and mentality that we've had. And I think we'll be fine. I don't think we need to think too hard on it. I think, you know, a lot of the bad that happened to us last year kind of rested on ourselves. So I think if we really focus on, you know, ourselves and, you know, our technique and what we do, I think we have plenty of talent and we have plenty of, you know, workforce. We have all the people we need, so I think we'll be all right.
Do our job, use our technique, and whip you know what. It sounds like, yeah, a pretty familiar moniker there for anyone that's been in a Harry Hiestand offensive line room that Ronnie knows all too well. Ronnie, we appreciate the time this morning, man. Best of luck with everything as you guys get ready for this season, and we'll be watching you, so stay healthy and good luck, brother.
Appreciate you, Mike. And Mike, thanks for having me. Great talking to you guys.
Thanks, Ronnie.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.